Welcome once again to the Investable ETO briefing. The one presenting today is for the period 1st of September to the 30th. As the document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services supplied to investment quality companies or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. So, as we all know, this typically is a debt owing from one company to another. And typically, these are large companies or banks that would be household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. And we call these supplier businesses originators, because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buy these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. By doing so, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the discount that we purchased it for and what it settles at creates a margin, and that's the margin that creates the yield for the investors. So essentially, they work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction, and we're providing liquidity to these businesses, and we get paid a commission for it, same way a bank charges interest. So as the briefing states, at the end of September, Credit Exchange held active RSA of just under 19 million. That's consistent with the other 2 months in the quarter, albeit marginally down on August. RSA, as you know, stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and that's a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business or the originator and Credit Exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by the originator or originators to sell a certain value of ETR to us in a given period, typically a year. So, for example, let's say the originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 to run their business. They come to us, much like they would to a bank. They apply for a credit facility. If we agree to offer them the $250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days, they must agree to sell us $250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, which will be $1.5 million worth of ETR every 12 months. So as stated, at the end of September, we held just under 19 million of these active RSA contracts. There has been a slight decline in those values month on month. We're not overly concerned about it because, as I've explained in the last number of briefings, we're trading faster, settling sooner, and the value of the contracts are larger. And also, as we move further into the trade finance arena, the cash-to-cash cycle is shortening simply because we're getting settled by letters of credit, which are issued on Monday and probably settle, if not in the same week, within 7 or 10 days, so a week and a half later. So hence the shortening of that cycle. As this briefing is about September's trade, the continued positive increase in trading has been pretty steady since the start of January. So we had set, as I've said before, we've set a target to trade 175 million this year. Last month, we were pretty much on target to hit the 150 mark. We've got some very interesting transactions at advanced stages of negotiation at this moment, which would push us over the 175 mark, but we'll certainly hit the 150 mark or more. Also, you might remember from previous calls, there's a number of PPE transactions that we have picked up over the course of the year. So where we have lost trade from our, call it staple originators over the last number of years. They've been trading less in the last 6 months. The PPE transactions have counterbalanced any negative effects of light trading in those sectors. The briefing then goes on to say that there was 27.92 million fully allocated. That's a 14% increase on August's figure of 24.5 million. And what this fully allocated figure means is that at the end of September, the exchange held ETR valued at circa 28 million. Or said another way, there was 28 million of investors' funds in the market on the last day of September. You then add that to the almost 19 million of RSAs that we held on file, and you combine the two of them together, you end up with a figure of a total of circa 46 million, which is just over a 4% increase on August's numbers. Moving to the next figure, it states that the investors redeemed 260,000 of their funds in September. That was from a total of 17 different investors, withdrawing just over a quarter of a million during last month. But at the same time, we took in 2.43 million of new or additional funds from 16 other investors. These funds were a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB, PRSAs, and private investors' savings. As with August, the level of a quarter of a million withdrawals would be more typical, I should say, of what is traditionally a summer month. But as we all know, this year has proven to follow everything but the norm. So overall, investor inflows continue to outgrow withdrawals, and are consistent with prior year's trends at a high level. But money in versus money out is not normally at a 10 to 1 ratio. It's typically at a 1 to 1 or 3 to 2 type thing. So 10 to 1 is unusually high to have inbound at that ratio. But it's safe to say that the coronavirus has been taken in its stride by the exchange, and we continue to demonstrate stability, liquidity, and obviously there's a real demand from investors in the market it serves. So it's business as usual for the whole of quarter three, and September obviously confirmed that. As stated in multiple briefings over the past 6 months, the economic crisis has and is being good to investable investors, which brings the focus of the presentation to the ETR average duration figure of 88 days. We call this the credit index. This is the average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. As I mentioned earlier, it's the cash-to-cash cycle from the day the ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. In June, the index hit an all-time high of 134 days. So 88 days is exactly the same for September of this year as it was for September of 2019. So that's a 46-day reduction over the past 2 months, or almost 50% improvement. So for all originators in the market, a drop back to 88 days means payments in September of this year were as efficient as they were last year. So it's a marked improvement in the flow of faster settlements, and therefore will give them an overall increased cash flow. So this means that originators have the same revolving, can operate at this moment using the same revolving credit facility requirements that they had last year. But as we all know, the government returned us to lockdown this week. So this return to norm, I think, will be short-lived, and we expect to see this index go back over the 100 days, but maybe not as severe as the June level. The next few weeks will tell us. As we're now in the last quarter of the year, our forecasts from the beginning of this year of predicted strong growth in our business remains the case. And as at the 30th of September, we were still on target to meet that projection. Last month, I talked about the consumption of high fashion, consumer goods, luxury items, and so on and so forth. I also mentioned soundings about inflation. And broadly speaking, there was a 180 degree turn by the population of Ireland and England moving from being consumers to going into survival mode, I guess. And how pension holders in particular facing the 4 years of flat to negative yield, we're also now facing a further increase by the charge with bank deposits now running at 65 basis points. Actually, during this week, I spoke briefly to a cobbler just down the road from our offices here on Baggot Street. Conversation turned pretty quickly to what was going to be the effect of the lockdown, how his business was affected by the previous lockdown, and indeed the one we're now in today. Anyway, he tells me that his business, along with many people he knows, not only in Dublin, but in other parts of the country, is down by a whopping 90%. So that made me think, if people aren't getting their shoes repaired, they're not walking. And if they're not walking, they're not working. Now you might say that there's plenty of people working from at home, but when you look at the statistics of 400,000 people affected either on a long-term basis over the last 6 months by being completely out of work or in some form of government subsistence on their work, it makes me think we're also focused on this lockdown and the impact that it's having on us personally and the infection statistics, that we know we're in a bad situation, but we're not paying attention to our friends across the water and the fact that we are 10 weeks away from Brexit, and what effect that's going to have to compound what my friend in the shoe repair shop down the road is telling me. So anyway, going to look at the ESRI report's headline basically says it all, where the Irish economy faces the largest recession in history as the lockdown takes its toll, is their headline. They expect that the GDP will decline by anywhere from 12.5% to as high as 17% this year. And as I said, it's to experience the largest annual decline in its history. The same report goes on to say that all aspects of the economy will be considerably affected, with significant declines in consumption, investment, and exports of goods and services. As a direct result, the government's deficit will run to in excess of 27 billion is the estimate. Then we look to Brexit, and the news doesn't get any better there either. The UK is the world's fifth largest economy and is still one of the most important individual trading partners for Ireland. All previous analysis of the effects of Brexit suggested that there would be a possible fall in Irish GDP of between 0.5% to 1%. However, those reports hadn't factored in COVID-19 and how the UK economy was going to be affected itself. So according to a recent PwC report, their economy in the UK is expecting a decline of between 11 and 12% in GDP. So I'd suggest when you combine the UK's own pandemic figures, their drop in GDP and so on, it's probably a fair estimate to suggest the decline in Ireland as a result of Brexit will actually be between 2 and 4%. So if you take that average and add it to the ESRI's 17% and rounded at an even 20%. What does that look like, or what does it mean? Let's put it this way. The country was almost bankrupt in 2010. We all know the effect it had on property prices, pensions, jobs, or more correctly, unemployment. The list is pretty extensive, and it was as bad as any of us had ever seen. The bad news is that as bad as things were back in 2010, GDP declines were off only by 10% in 2010. So on this call, we even begin to think about what 20% decline is going to look like. Okay, this time around, the banks are maybe liquid. The central bank may not be talking about green jerseys, but I suggest that a lot of people are going to see their jerseys taken off their back before the year's out. And as the government plans to have a nice Christmas by returning us all to level 3 and 4 for December, what I'm seeing in January and February are very cold numbers altogether, the like of which will cause many micro to medium-sized businesses to fail, and for many more that will be able to survive, they may take a very long time to recover. So for those unconvinced of the 20% drop, I'd suggest this is a conservative estimate for this year, because the Irish approach to recessions has always been to export our problem in the form of emigration. During the 1970s and 80s, we just simply sent our workforce abroad. When you consider this, the contractions of GDP are a worldwide phenomenon, it might not be as easy this time around to reduce the strain on the exchequer, because the unemployment may be forced to remain unemployed at home. So we can all see what is happening to our economy. As explained in prior briefings, during 2019, Credit Exchange had begun expanding its business internationally. It needed to do so if we wanted to accelerate our growth, whilst at the same time ensuring we continued to maintain the high levels of quality ETR. Ahead of 2020, we were already in foreign markets, and as you may know, we opened an office in Birmingham in the first quarter of this year. Both of these moves have seen us stay on target and on budget to the end of September 2020, but we know there will be some impact from the decline of our local market, and we will experience some losses and have to absorb them too. However, by being in the larger EU and international markets, we can carefully select the originators we need to sustain our growth plans, while also, as stated, ensuring the quality and low risk profile of the ETR we trade remains stable. As a final observation on how the remainder of this year will pan out and how we expect 2021 to repeat 2020 numbers in our local markets, we continue to focus on developing our focus internationally to ensure we can meet investor demand for ETR. From an email I received literally a few moments before this call, there's fresh commentary in from Berenberg Economics that reads as follows. Global trade volumes and global industrial production are rebounding significantly, including their 2.5 month-on-month and 1.5 month-on-month respective increases in August. They've recouped almost 80% of their pandemic-related declines. Both are on track to regain their pre-pandemic levels by the first half of next year, which is obviously much faster than they did following the financial crisis of 2008-2009. Global supply chains are unclogging, enabling factories to ramp up production, and high-frequency data on industrial commodity prices and container freight rates point to continued healthy gains in global production and trade. So we've definitely made the right decision to focus our attentions on all things trade finance related in the broader international market. In July, the exchange, as you may recall, had an all-time high of 37 million trade in the month. August remained strong at a respectable 13.24, but September was not good, and the numbers were low relative to the time of year, at under 10 million, coming in at 9.1 million. The number for October is more positive as I speak. In month 10, we've pulled back to the positive, and it'll see us meet or beat August numbers. And subject to certain transactions currently under negotiation, we cautiously hold last month's comment that we may still meet the year's target. Below last month's trading figure of 9.1 million, you will see the same period treasury performance was 11.17 million. This means we spent just over 9 million and collected 2.1 more million, more than that. That's an overbalance of inflow versus outflow, meaning trade purchases were only below that of trade settlements by 2 million. As most of you already know, Trade Desk and Treasury monitor that trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down in the credit risk policies. The return back to an almost even flow of cash and the improvement in the credit index by 46 days, again, was certainly a contributing factor in the performance of Treasury during last month. Moving to the center of the document, there is the list of the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money at the end of September. And as you can see, the HSE, Huawei continue to hold their slots for the seventh month. As with last month, we see the repeated appearance of Atradius, CBRE, Vodafone and others. And Cork City Council, that came back to us in July, remained with us for the quarter, as does Musgraves, who are also based in Cork. On the right-hand side are the highest-rated debtors, and this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability. As with last month, as none of these were investment-grade or have an investment-grade rating, as at the 30th of September, this is simply a selection of the ones we think are most creditworthy. Moving then to the pie chart below these two sets of lists, continues to demonstrate a significant change in what is typically a well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Since April, May of this year, the health pandemic continues to show that the HSE here in Ireland and the NHS in England, along with others in the health and community sectors, are off their April high of more than 25% of our book and remain as they were in July at around about 15% mark. Looking to the last quarter of the year and the events in the UK and Ireland in the last 2 weeks, we can now see this will rise again as the originators for credit facilities in this sector are now at advanced stages of negotiation with us. And we expect to conclude several significant trades in personal protection equipment, or PPE, in early November. These were expected back in August and September, as stated last month, but our appetite for trade will not allow us to overshadow our risk appetite. And as I said, those trades are expected early next month. The reasons for the unusual delay in writing the trades is simply because PPE equipment may be attractive as a proposition, but they continue to present a potentially risky trade because manufacturers and indeed agents can often miss the mark in terms of quality and execution. In last month's briefing, I mentioned one particular transaction that we were working on since the middle of August. And I expressed the view that the US debtor wouldn't meet our required standards. My prediction was correct, and we did, in fact, decline to trade them. So this pie chart repeats a heavy exposure also to the wholesale retail market. And as with last month, that's predominantly wholesale and not retail. So just like the cobbler I mentioned earlier, high street retail has experienced a severe downturn since February. And thankfully, we have no significant originators in that sector. Looking to the wholesale side, trade has been strong and indeed brisk. The pie chart does continue to reference EU NACE categorizations system. And we are still on target for implementing our own credit classification system. On Wednesday of this week, actually, I saw the first live demonstration of our new credit machine software that'll be used to bring the exchange into the next 5, if not 10 years of trading. As this system advances, adopting our own credit classification system will be possible and will be executed. As stated, from a trade receivables risk perspective, we're more concerned with what we call the players in the trade, namely who's the originator, who's the debtor, what's the product, and what's the primary and secondary markets. So the credit classification is a much simpler method of analyzing that market. So hence the reason moving away from it. Returning back to the actual performance of the exchange in September of this year versus September 2019, you can see that the trading values were up almost 70%. So it continues its strong pullback to the positive from quarter two. And as I mentioned earlier, the year's target income and budget for a growth of overall 75% does remain credible. Earlier, I spoke about the credit index of 88, and next to that, you will see that we have more than 6,200 creditors or debtors and creditors at month end in September. As per prior investor conference calls, relative to the number of trading companies in Ireland, this is a significant and statistically strong reference point when considering the Irish market. So this credit index is a strong indicator of how credit control and payment cycles are performing in Ireland at the moment. For any originator, an improvement of 50% in the number of days in the past 2 months, a 50% improvement in the number of days it takes them to get paid, I'm sure is a significant and welcome improvement. And finally, to finish our performance in September, the largest single trade was just under 250,000. As explained in the investor brochure and also other briefings, the average value of an ETR is 2,000 euro, but we have traded ETR where the value was less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was 230,000. So moving to the trend section of last month's briefing, we can see that the investor's yield or buy price during September averaged 1.810%. This was a slide backward to July's number. And as explained earlier, our high standards and negotiations surrounding the onboarding of new originators provides us with an ongoing issue of getting new origination. This naturally affects our ability to raise the yield levels at this moment. As I said last month, market stability is good, and being able to hold steady at 10 to 20 basis points off the 2% mark versus negative 65 basis points in the bank, the investors are almost 2.75% percent better off with ETR than holding the money in cash. In the bank, that is, of course. As always, and as I've stated at pretty much every briefing this year, improving yield is a primary focus of the exchange, because to raise yield means we have raised origination. Whilst preparing for this presentation earlier today, I was personally directly involved in the negotiations on 3 separate deals, and these are separate from the other 14 transactions that are with other members of the business desk here in Dublin. Not wanting to count our chickens before the eggs have hatched, but I'd like to think we'd be able to break the 2% ceiling this year, or at worst, early next year. As always, this is a subject to how successfully our expanded originator market reacts. There's only 7 full trading weeks until year end, as far as we're concerned. I don't want to be too optimistic. Looking back to May, we were at the lower rate of 1800. This rate changes daily and can be checked anytime at the investable.com website. But to discuss the trend in a little more detail, the graph on the right shows the movement during the month. We started at 1.840, and as the days passed, it rolled slowly down and settled at 1.800. To finish this briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA, a revolving sale agreement of 19.71 million. So that is our briefing for this month. Thank you very much.